countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Spaced Out here at the last comic shop.
That's right, and now insert a sound effect for a water pipe, because we are really opening the shop up to newbies this week to help them find their way and maybe explain what the heck is going on with some comic books.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we're keeping the lights on for the people that are wondering, what the hell are we doing here? This book, where we're going to read it, we're going to talk about it, we're going to try to figure out what the hell are we doing here?
Well, you know what? That's what we do on The Last Comic Shop. I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith and J.A. Scott, and we try to educate. Every single week, we bring comic books out to the masses. We show them that there are more to just comic books than just capes and cowls and, you know, people running around in their underwear and stuff. And sometimes you get trippy space epics, like this week's book, which is my pick, and the one I've been wanting to read for a really, really long time. It is from Philippe Drouant. I think that's how you pronounce it. J.A., did I get even in the ballpark?
I'd say Philippe Drouet.
Okay. I'd say Philippe Drouet.
Oh!
It's fun to say yay!
But it's called The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan. It's been reprinted several times, but the most recent reprint was done by Titan Books out of England. And we are reading it on this week's show in a way of bringing attention to what I think is some gorgeous, gorgeous art. Even if the story itself is complex.
No, it's batshit crazy.
There you go. But let's be fair. This batshit craziness originally was published in Francais back in 1972. So it is coming through a couple of different Google translators to get you here. And our edition was from 2015 from Titan Press.
Absolutely. And we'll get a little bit more into the big history behind this particular book, which actually, again, if you are a comic book historian, there is a lot of little Easter eggs and nuggets of information that we'll be laying on you in just a second. But one thing that we also like to lay on you is our weekly polls. That's right. Despite J.A.'s happiness with posting them, you think like he has to do a lot of work here, like carve it into stone and stuff. It's not. He posts it on social media. He is our poll master, and we took a break from doing these for a while. But we finally decided to bring him back, and they've been going for the last 10 weeks, but we haven't recapped any of them. So I thought it would be a great opportunity on this week's show to let J.A. School us on what our fans think of certain topics, right?
Yes, and they have spoken, and we have an opinionated set of fans. I should say that.
All right, well, what's the first poll in our poll recap for this week?
Well, the first poll, this came out around Valentine's Day, I do believe. What is your favorite comic book love triangle?
Ooh.
Is it Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Wolverine? Is it Black Cat, Spider-Man, and MJ? Is it, and this one I was really disappointed didn't win, Betty, Archie, or Veronica? The old classic. Or is it Vision, Scarlet Witch, and Wonder Man?
It's still the stupidest name for any superhero ever. I'm sorry. Every single time I hear Wonder Man, I can just think of Wonder Bread. That's all I think about. I'm like, here comes Wonder Bread. No, Wonder Man. It's his safari jacket and his terrible costumes. His little jets on his belt. Dumb. Dumb, dumb, dumb. But in any case, yeah, those were our choices. Chad, did you vote for Spider-Man or somebody else?
I went with the classic X-Men, you know, Wolverine staring at his picture, forlornly, you know, fast forward to Scotty doesn't know and all that other stuff, and Wolverine, Cyclops, and Jean Grey.
You think she's better off with Wolverine or better off with Scott, Chad?
Don't care. Scott has proven to be one of the least likable characters in comics. Jean Grey, they just kill her again and 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 again. And then there's Wolverine, where he has many lives and many women loved and many loves lost. And so, yeah, whatever.
He is the best at what he does.
Well, I did vote for Spider-Man, honestly, although I thought this should have been a Mary Jane, Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy triangle. I guess that was showing my age and my original bent to like, you want, you're blonde or you're a redhead or whatever. But I just, I shouldn't say that because I got my Mary Jane and Peter Parker back. So what do I care? What do I care what's going on in Amazing Spider-Man? Please.
You can't carry a torch for Gwen anymore because now it's Spider-Gwen and she's a teenager and that's extra creepy.
Yes, very, very true. But I still voted for them just because, again, Wonder Man was terrible. Who'd you vote for, J.A.?
I voted for Betty, Archie, and Veronica, the classics.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't get enough votes, though.
Well, who did get the most votes?
Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Wolverine took it with 41% of the vote, so...
Did Archie, Betty, and Veronica even come close?
They were third at 24. MJ, Black Cat, Spider-Man was second at 29. Vision and Wonder Man. Wonder Man brought up the rear at 6%.
I'm just surprised, though. I'm surprised you didn't vote for the X-Men. But I guess you do love the classics. Any case, speaking of classics, let's have a classic with question number two.
This coincided, I think, with the Superman book, obviously, because it was all about Superman. What is your favorite song about Superman? And because I'm a Gen Xer, this is going to feature a lot of 80s and 90s bands, because there's a lot of songs about Superman.
Yes. Yeah, we need to comment on the fact that, like, you picked four, but, like, in the comments, there was at least 10 more. Like, people were like, no, you got them all wrong. But which ones did you pick,
Jay? Yeah, there's a lot of blowback that I didn't go with the Crash Test Dummies Superman song. but what we did do was Superman's Dead by Our Lady Peace, Jimmy Olsen Blues by the Spin Doctors, Kryptonite by Three Doors Down, and Waiting for Superman by the Flaming Lips.
Yeah. But there's like a ton of ones that you... R.E.M., Superman, I Am, Superman. And I do like that Crash Test Dummy song.
Yeah.
Clark Kent, there was a real gent. And it came out at the time when after he died and they made like, Superman never made any money. It was terrible. It was terrible, but terribly good.
What about tugging on Superman's cape?
Yeah, don't tug on Superman's cape. Some Jim Croce out there.
Bad. Leroy Brown.
Did you? What did you vote for of these four, Chad?
I enjoy the Flaming Lips. And so even though the song's a bit of a downer, I went with Waiting for Superman.
I went with Jimmy Olsen Blues because I was always a huge fan of that Spin Doctors album. Listen to that all the time, especially with J.A. We were huge, huge fans of that original Pocketful of Kryptonite album. Is that what you voted for too, J.A.?
No, I went with Superman's Dead by Our Lady Peace. They actually ended up tying with Three Doors Down for Kryptonite, so we had two winners, two losers if you count the other two. No one besides Chad voted for Waiting for Superman. Sorry.
Oh, man. There wasn't even that Five for Fighting song. It's not easy to be cheese.
No, I could, and the deep cut, I could have gone with Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler, because that's actually a song about Superman, too.
Really?
Yes.
Out for a Hero.
But everyone just cannot... Everyone just puts that with the Footloose. So
you're right, exactly. That's a tractor song. You're on a tractor when you listen. There's no dancing in this town.
That's me embarrassing my 12-year-old with motivational 80s songs to pull up to his soccer tournaments. He's like, Dad, turn it off. Dad, turn it off.
All right. What was question number three, J.A.?
Who is your favorite Peanuts character?
Yay! Was it Lucy?
I should have put like three Lucys in there. Should have put three Lucys. I did not. Probably a good thing because she came in last. Yeah. So none of them likes Lucy. But it was Charlie Brown, Lucy, Linus, or Snoopy. And just take a wild swing at who won this one.
Well, I will say this. Linus was leading in the polls for a little while there. Lots of folks love the security blanket, Linus's pearls of wisdom, and so forth. So he was winning until, like, yeah, Snoopy ran away with this one, right?
He did. He took over 50% of the vote.
It's got to be Joe Cool. How could it not?
Kudos to Mikey Wood, though, posting publicly that everybody should vote for Charlie Brown just because the dude needs a win. He did needs a win. And I was hoping that somebody would come through for old Chuck Brown, give him a reason to get up in the morning. But no, his dog is still much more popular than even he ever was. So
Lucy yanked that football away. Lucy, by the way, modeled after Charles Schulz's ex-wife.
Ouch.
Question number four, J.A.
Which Fantastic Four power would you want? Would you want stretching and all the weird body horror that can go with it? If you want to put your eye through your finger and go searching around? Do you want invisibility, super strength, or do you want to be able to create your own team of flamos?
Yes. Chad, this coincided with the Ryan North Fantastic Four book, and that was your pick. What power did you want, buddy?
So of all the ones I thought would be the most useful, in retrospect, probably not, because like if I walk up a hill, you can hear me coming. But I went with invisibility. I thought, oh, I'll be stealthy as much as I can.
I did not, because I have read too much of the science fictions and thought about invisibility way too much. And I'm always one of those people that seems to rain on everybody's parade by saying, if you were truly invisible, you'd also be blind, because your retinas would be transparent. They wouldn't bounce off anything. It would just be terrible. So no, I'm not going with that. And I'm not going with stretching. And super strength's bunk. Just because you're strong doesn't mean like your muscles can like hold the weight. They can't. They just crumble unless you are also invulnerable. So screw that. I'm going with flames. I'm just catch on fire. Just run around and roast my own marshmallows. It's fine. J.A.?
I went with invisibility. That won by 50% of the vote. Stretching came in dead last.
Nobody wants to stretch.
Everybody goes and works out. They never do. They just end up pulling things. It's fine. You should stretch before you do that. No, that's okay. I'll just throw my back out. It's all right.
Reed Richards a chump.
But you were going to say something about my fire powers. I knew you had a comment.
Well, I think because you were going so like scientific on these things, I was like, well, if you had fire powers, then you'd need a lot of wardrobe because,
you know, where are you going to use your fire powers, pal?
Yeah.
I'm going to go stand out in the middle of the street. It's fine.
You're going to start. The only place you'd be decent at is like family barbecues and early on in life when you're having a bonfire.
No,
be that uncle with the lighter fluid going. That's exactly what you've become. You've become Mr. Lighter Fluid Uncle.
Yeah. Worse than that, he does not have the unstable molecules, so he's going to be Mr. Public Exposure Uncle.
Yes.
No, thank you.
Brings a whole new meaning to the word sparkler.
All right, let's wrap it up. We got a book to read. So what's number five, J.A.?
Number five is the best iconic action figure line. Because this coincided with ROM, a property that did a lot better as a comic book than it ever did as a toy.
Yeah.
But what was your favorite toy line, iconic action figure line specifically? Is it Star Wars? Is it the 80s G.I. Joe? I guess you could say all G.I. Joe. Is it He-Man? Or is it the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes. Now, do you want to lay on everybody out there that was a big fan of TMNT, like how pissed off you were that they were leading the voting at first?
I was like, how is TMNT winning this? G.I. Joe or Star Wars should be walking away with this. I thought the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the He-Man crowd were going to split the vote on that one. I guess not.
Yeah, Yeah, but I mean, I'm not even going to ask. I will ask Chad. I mean, I think it's G.I. Joe, but I don't know. He has a soft spot for He-Man, too. That's probably number two, but...
Actually, my number one favorite toy line was the Superpowers.
Yeah?
The old DC toy line. That was the best. But no, I loved them all, man. I still remember the He-Man tour that came to the malls. And they had little Castle Grayskull they'd set up in the aisle there. And you got to have the power and how wonderful that was. But at the end of the day, nothing beats G.I. Joe's. My getting the little eyeglass screwdriver and taking the legs off of that guy and putting them on that guy and making a whole new guy. Oh, and then getting the new rubber bands and spinning them around and doing the giant ninja kick. And my man Crazy Legs, I just threw off his stuff. Like, he's Crazy Legs. I had so much fun with G.I. Joe. That's my winner.
Right. Everybody knows the winner for me is always Masters of the Universe. He-Man's always going to be very near and dear to my heart. And I'm guessing everybody knows what J.A.'s pick was in this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it goes without saying it's Star Wars.
Even with the limited articulation, as Chad is off to point out.
They're all just Nazi salutes and high kicks.
Didn't even need a vehicle. You could just put them in their seated position and fly them around like they were piloting an aircraft.
Yeah. But none of us voted for TMNT, and it actually did not win either. So what did win, J.A.?
Give it up for the more articulated, rubber band-powered G.I. Joe. Yes.
Da-da-da.
And I will say, I think all three of us can agree that we've all got a little bit of a soft spot for G.I. Joe. We all played with some G.I. Joes back in the day. And
yeah, I had the original 3¾-inch line, like the when they didn't have the rotating arms yet, or the
They still had the straight arms.
Still had the straight arms, sort of, you know, all the ones in green. They still look like army soldiers before they became.
No, I benefited. I had an older cousin who was on early in the line, and so I got the best of both worlds. I got your Storm Shadows, your Spirits, all the guys that were on the cartoons, and I got all the wacky guys, as you got later on, and the Battle Force 2000 guys that in the comic book, Larry Hama's like, I'm not dealing with this crap, and he blew them up.
Well, I'm just glad that the old folks won that poll, not the, like, later millennials. You know, by the way, I think I saw something the other day where it was that TMNT Last Ronin and, like, the sequel to Last Ronin are actually, like, top two best-selling comic books still right now in terms of sales or something, like, the trades are...
No, man, super popular. They're out the Last Ronin in Targets and Walmarts and...
Yeah.
Everyone's liking that nostalgic itch.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad that we reconnected with our nostalgic itch of having these weekly polls. I'm not sure if we're going to continue to do them. Try to tune in either on any of our social medias every week. See if we've got one. If we do, vote in it. And in any case, we'll be right back with more of The Last Comic Shop with our review of The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan right after this.
LastComicShopPodcast.com is the destination for all things shop. Plan your week with upcoming show schedules, the latest books, recommendations, and chatter from the crew. Subscribe to the show on all major podcasting platforms from one convenient location. Show your support and browse the merch store. T-shirts, tanks, hoodies for the fam, coffee mugs, magnets, totes, and more. Check out exclusive content through the show's YouTube channel and follow the pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and others. All this and so much more at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
Hi, it's Carlo Calentuan, Last Comic Shop podcast listener and comic book tragic here in the Philippines. My boy. When I'm in the U.S., I'm always on the lookout for a good deal on boards, bags, boxes, and all other manner of comic book-related supplies. And that's why I love to go to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD to get 10% off of all my orders. Not only do I get a discount on everything I buy at BCW, but I'm able to support the podcast when I use LCSPOD at checkout. So if you're in need of comic book supplies, head over to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD. Oh, and guys, I'm still waiting for that Tressy review. Come on, when is it?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, join us as we go back in time to the 70s in France, and we encounter The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan by one Philippe Drouillet. Andrew, you tend to know some things about this Philippe Drouillet, which we learned about in this 2015 Titan Comics edition. Tell us about Mr. Drouillet.
Well, he's still alive. He's about 80 years old, and he's been drawing comics for quite some time. His first published series was his own version of Michael Moorcock's Elric stories in a very short-lived magazine. From there, he introduced his character of Lone Sloan, which has become kind of one of his most iconic characters, and it allowed him to play with a lot of kind of science fiction-esque trippy things. Like, he was a huge, huge fan of folks like Lovecraft and even A.E. Vogt, who I've loved a lot of his work as well. Like, if you've ever read the novel Slan, almost like a precursor to, like, eventually would occur in comic books with, like, mutants and things. Like, people that are born with special powers and then they're put down by society and then they come through. So he had all of these awesome, like, things to pull from, and he put it into his Lone Sloan series, and it put him on the map. Folks like Herge, who created Tintin, was a huge fan of his work and really pushed him to the forefront as he became, like, a regular contributor to the Franco-Belgian comic series Pilot. And eventually he teamed up with a lot of additional European comic book creators at the time, including the very famous Mobius. Him and Jean-Pierre Diant, they formed the publishing house Humanoids, which we've read books from them before. Humanoids is a great comic book company who we often talk with. And their flagship title was Metal Hurlant, which a lot of folks may know better as Heavy Metal. That's right. Heavy Metal was the English adaptation of a lot of the comic books that were originally appearing in the French magazine Metal Hurlant. So, yeah, you can definitely tell if you read The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan that this stuff fits right into an issue of Heavy Metal. He's still kicking around. I think I just saw him in an interview with the Dune movie that just recently came out. He was talking, and I think the director of the new Dune movies was a huge fan of Philippe's work. And so he tried to use a lot of the visual storytelling that he pioneered.
There you go. And there is quite a bit of visual storytelling packed into these pages. I think our collection ran like 62 pages for The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan. And they are beautiful, which I'm sure we'll talk about more in a bit. But let's figure out what happened in these six voyages. And so for that, we're going to turn to our man, J.A., who's going to help us synopsisize.
What? Yeah, about that. So it kind of starts out, he's on a spacecraft, Lone Sloan. He's
and this is voyage number one.
This is voyage number one.
The throne of the Black God.
Yeah, and so he's on a spacecraft, and then he gets sort of, everyone is killed except for him, and he's given sort of a Thanos-like throne that he sits on by some godly god thing. They have told him that the time has come for him to sit on the throne, and then it's sort of the setup for him to go out and do all these other voyages.
Yeah. Let's help Jay out. The first one.
He gets in the chair, and then he goes to the people that have the weird masks, and they want him to give him the power so that then they can bring back the Dark Lord of something. Yeah. And then God talks to him and says, screw that. You're not going to bring back this Dark Lord guy.
And then there's 1,000 of them, and no one can know what happened after that. Next.
There's one where he's on the throne, but he's at the top of a really tall mountain, and there's this pirate ship.
They're a giant skeleton boat ship.
It was awesome as hell.
That wants to capture him so that he can lead them through the sands of this horrible desert where people fall off the path and die so that they can find gold, and they end up getting melted by the gold. And then there's another one.
I believe you were referring on that one to Voyage Number 2, The Wild Wind Isle.
Yes.
Anyway.
Then there's another one where he doesn't have the throne anymore, but he's got the red eyes, and he's on this junk planet, and it's a bit like WALL-E, where there are all these crashed bits of space detritus. So he's trying to put together a rocket ship, but then these giant robots come whenever music from an organ is played and smash his rocket ship. And then he goes to the organist. He's like, "Yo, what's the deal, man? You keep playing the organ and the robots come." And he's like, "No, I'm playing the organ to keep the robots away." And then it turns out that the organist is a robot himself. And then turns out that the organ is a spaceship. So then he gets out of there by playing the organ and turns it into a spaceship. Yes.
That's Voyage Number 3, Rose, which, by the way, giant smashing robot looks like he's wearing a stormtrooper from Star Wars helmet combined with an AT-AT, a big round belly. But, yes.
He's got a cool beard. And then we got to my favorite story, which is the fourth one. It's a giant space bridge.
Are you referring to Torqueda Varenkor, the bridge over the star?
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense if you think about space.
None of these make any sense.
It's this giant castle in space, and there's like space dragons, artificial intelligence that was running the organ ship, and then it turns into like a sexy woman. He has to shed himself of his badness. I thought that was awesome.
Did you say he has to shed himself of his badness? Because that's what it sounded like.
He has to shed himself of his badness, not shit.
I think both things could have happened here.
Yeah, my whole thing is, why is the Bifrost, why does it look like a chessboard?
It's one of those optical illusion things. You stare at it in the mall, and then you can see the sailboat. If you stare at it here, you can see his computer ship turn into a sexy robot.
There you go.
The fifth is Osidarta. What happens here?
Is that a space blimp? I think it's a space blimp. He gets on a space blimp, and then they try to put him in. I don't know what they try to put him in, like a tube.
They put him in one of those things that Luke was put in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh,
the Bacta tank. He needed a good long soak in the Bacta tank.
But eventually, I think the most important thing about that story is he finds out where Earth is. And then he decides to go back there, which is like the last story, which is Terra. And he gets back to Earth, and it's kind of like Genesis, like in Aztecs, the Bible, where he's not allowed to go back there. Like, he's like
Mayans or Aztecs or something.
We hate you, humanity, and you're not allowed to come back to Earth. So we're going to make you forget like you were even here and kick you out. I think that's what happens, right? Sure.
No one can know. No one can know what happens here.
Right. But there's a giant space lobster. And yes.
And the people look very much, it reminded me of sort of the art direction of that old, of that Mel Gibson movie, Apocalypto.
Yes. Good stuff. It's good stuff. That was the 10-cent synopsis. With initial thoughts, I just want to throw it out here that there are some books that we read on this show that remind me why we are doing this show, right? Because I get it. The plot of some of these stories is really hard to comprehend at times. Sometimes even like the way that the panel layout isn't on these pages is sometimes difficult because you have to start at like the upper left and then you kind of go curving around the page at some point. And I sometimes still didn't understand like where I was supposed to look next. What I will say is, my God, the art in this book, it's gorgeous. It is so unbelievably transcendent, at least in my opinion, that like I don't care if there's words in this book. I'm just looking at the art. It's so detailed and so intricate and so many people cribbed from this. Like, right, like, could you not see, like, Jim Starlin picking up this book and being like, yeah, that's what Adam Warlock looks like. Like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do with Thanos. This is what my Church of the whatever in that big storyline that
Magus.
Yeah, with Magus. All of that it's here.
Or this, even it's in the Teen Titans and the X-Men where they go to the end of the world and see
the Source Wall.
Yeah, the Source Wall. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's all here, right? What, it first came out in 1966, and then it was in the early 70s. Like, a lot of these stories came out around 1970. So that would predate Jack Kirby going to DC and creating the New Gods. That would predate all of the cosmic stuff that Jim Starlin did in the mid-70s. Like, I feel like this is the wellspring. Like, you're looking at the wellspring where a lot of really great ideas came from. I don't know, guys. What did you think?
Well, I definitely, on the art side of the equation, I could see as I was reading through this how this was your jam. Because at first I was thinking, okay, I'm definitely picking up almost like Flash Gordon vibes in terms of the grandiosity of all these images. There's definitely some awesome sci-fi Jack Kirby hints sprinkled in here. A little bit of, you know, stuff that would look just at home in an H.R. Giger or a Mobius style. Like, there's little bits all over. The technology that's in here is always stretching the bounds of the imagination. And the fact that it's just one guy doing the colors, designing all these crazy things. And then you would get these weird alien races where, like, sometimes they look like Shogun warriors. And sometimes they look like bug creatures. And sometimes they're giant masks and look like Aztec, you know, artifacts. It's just... it's such a mishmash of all of this cool looking visual stuff. And then it doesn't make any sense at all.
Did that bother you? I mean, like, Chad, was that a sticking point for the book? Is the fact that you were like, this doesn't make any sense.
It bothered me. Yeah. I thought, it's like, am I not cool enough for this book halfway yeah. through it? I really did. And then I was like, well, I'll just keep reading. And by the end, I realized it doesn't matter if you're cool or not, as long as you're enjoying yourself, which I don't know if I did or not, but I did like the art.
Okay. Yeah. No, the art was beautiful. I'm with Jay. We're like, I'm about four pages in, and I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely not cool enough for this. And the fact of the matter is it's running through the translator, and so... none of the dialogue, unfortunately, lands the way I think they intended. And there are so many big concepts. And, oh, this guy, oh, he's controlled by hate and anger. Oh, no, his eyes are red. Look out. Nah, it's just, look at the cool machines and aliens. And if your brain accidentally picks up something along the way, more power to you. But the scope and scale of the visuals alone are enough to make this, you know, an impressive experiment.
Right. I still can't get over, again, my favorite story is that story 4, and it starts off with just that picture of this massive space bridge, and like each of the, I don't know, what would you call those, turrets of the bridge or the rampart or whatever, they're like anchored into planets, and so they're just like massive, they're just enormous structures, and everything is just so intricate that I thought of Kirby in some of those scenes from the Nude Gods. A Metron would go and visit the Source Wall and visit these giant creatures that were anchored to giant planets. And I said, well, shoot, Philippe was doing this like several years before even Kirby got around to that.
Well, I was going to say, too, you have the blood ship where it's that giant skull with the tusks coming out of it. And this boat that's so high up, and it looks like it's almost like a castle on top of a boat sailing in a sea of blood, straight out of a Lovecraftian Conan the Barbarian tale. This book runs the gamut. It's all these crazy ideas, you know, that we can see like, oh, this is a seat for this, or this was
a seat
for
that. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of the guy that goes around in a throne, and the throne is his spacecraft. I mean, that's Thanos, right? That's all from this.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there were other pages I was looking at, and all I could think of was Walt Simonson. Like, there was some Walt Simonson-esque things going on here. I think that anybody that's really into comics, whether they, you know, want to read the dialogue or not, should buy this book just simply because, again, it's only like 62 pages. So it's like, and some of the pages are just two page spreads of space. cutting between the two stories. But you should just read it just because of, like, the visual storytelling.
Hold on. I'm not going to say you should read it for the storytelling. Because, once again, it doesn't make a damn lick of sense. The storytelling is a stretch there. But look at it for the visual ideas that are thrust onto the page. That I can second.
Yeah. Before we go to commercial break, I do want to point out that if you get this awesome reprint done by Titan Press, he actually did bronzes of some of the designs that appear in these books. So he was not just a comic book artist. He did a bronze of Sloane, as well as a bronze of his Black God from the first story. So he put his ideas in mediums other than the printed page, which I think is super cool. I don't care if the book doesn't make any sense. It's awesome. It is awesome with a capital A. Yeah, this is why you read comics, to see stuff like this.
I was definitely picking up Jodorowsky vibes, where yeah. It's like, sometimes it's the idea for the sake of the idea, you know, and the image there, and just running with it. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense. It's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, in any case, we're going to be awesome with our ratings of this particular book right after these commercial breaks. So stay tuned for that.
You know what I think? This world we're in right now is the fairy tale. And what's really real is on the other side.
Ramsey, mechanic by day, aspiring comic book creator by night, went into the woods and tripped. He was bombarded by bizarre and mysterious glyphs that he drew into his sketch pad and onto the body of his muse, Regina.
Oh, Groovy! Your art is crawling all over me.
Shit. What is going on with you?
What's going on with you? All of a sudden, you're a complete drip, baby. Maybe you need another limb to the head!
Ah! Bloom, written and created by Ted Sikora, with art by Butch Mappa.
How are you feeling, Ram Man?
You've never experienced a story so astonishing, so far out and away from the beaten path.
Where in the f*** am I?
Blast off with Bloom, the origin of a prophet. Order yours at herotomorrow.com.
When six teenagers are caught in a devastating storm, they wake up the next day with unimaginable abilities. Now the same storm that gave them their powers has awoken an ancient evil set on destroying their home and the world at large. And it's up to them to stop it. In a world without heroes, they're here to kick some ass. Read Born a Storm, a new ongoing series for free at Born a Storm Comic on Instagram. Hashtag Born a Storm.
Back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for our ratings, where we hope that you don't space out on us during this last segment. Trust me, we've only got a little bit left on this show. It's good.
I'm spaced, man. I'm spaced. Look out.
We've got a 1 out of 4 scale out of from J.A. Scott. So, J.A., how are we rating the Six Voyages of Lone Sloane this week?
Well, it's voyages, obviously.
No.
Because each voyage comes with its own whacked out storyline. So.
Yes. These are the continuing voyages of Lone Sloane. They didn't say 5-year mission. This is the continuing mission of Lone Sloane.
The next generation?
That's true.
That would mean Lone Sloane is a Frenchman played by an Englishman.
Now you're on the trolley. Any case, were you on the trolley with this, J.A.? How many voyages are you giving it?
Yeah,
I'm
not cool enough to say it's 4. Because I didn't get it half the time. The art was amazing though. Just for the art alone, it's like 3.5. But it was not the easiest read. You picked it up and you wanted to like it. You wanted to appreciate it all, but half of the time my brain was turning itself in knots to try to figure out what the heck is going on. Not just with the dialogue or the story or the plot. What the heck is going on with this art? It's almost too intricate. It breaks your brain. which is why I said this was done in the 60s and the 70s. They were doing a lot of recreational drugs at that time, kids. I'm not suggesting recreational drug use. I'm not saying that the artist, writer did recreational drugs, but during this time, there was a lot of recreational drug use being had among the artistic sides of society. So maybe if you were on the LSD or the pot or the PCP or something else.
PCP!
Holy mackerel!
What are you going to turn into a zombie, start eating people?
Sweet Jesus!
Any case, I was actually surprised that you didn't appreciate this more. You're usually a prog rocker. You're out there listening to your...
Yes, prog rock, but there's prog rock and then there's prog rock. So this is like the King Crimson prog rock. This isn't in the Jethro Tull, which is like approachable prog rock.
Oh, Lordy, so, Hannah.
Did we ever settle on a rating, or are we just going with different types of prog rock?
I think eventually in that rambling, he said 3.5. Maybe 3.5 bath salts.
Voyages. Voyages is...
Right. No, that's fine. I'm surprised, though. I thought this was going to be your jam as much as it was my jam. I'm going to give this a 4. Screw you guys. It's a 4. You don't have to understand it. You could get a 4 just like by taking one of these images that's in this book, blowing it up, putting it at a wall on a museum, and just being like, look at that. Look at that. Look at that bridge work. Look at that. It's great. There's another scene. Look at that giant robot with the pot belly and the beard and like how he's trampling on all the things like he's so great. That's awesome. There's another scene where, like, Lone Sloan meets the Black Gods, and he, like, clones himself a billion times or something. Like, infinite repeating images into the horizon. I don't know. I can't get away from just how gorgeous everything is in this book. Not just the intricate pencil work and the ink work, but the color design, the choices of colors, the shadowing that he uses. Bright oranges and contrasting with blues and purples, greens, and everything is psychedelic in a good way. I don't know how to explain it. I think that you just need to experience it. And if you are a comic book fan of any of these artists, if you're saying you're a fan of Jack Kirby or Walt Simonson or John Buscema or Jim Starlin, like anybody that's come since this book came out, they must have seen it. I'm not going to say cribbed it, but made a mental note of what was going on in this particular book and incorporated it a little bit into what they were doing. Because it's groundbreaking. It's groundbreaking. People would take it. Maybe they take it in a different direction and it would become a little more commercial and make more sense. But this is the wellspring. This is the original. This is where it all comes from. It's a 4, guys. It is a 4 just for the visuals alone. Chad.
Okay, I disagree. The visuals are magnificent. And I definitely think the amount of ideas crammed into this alone make this a worthwhile endeavor. And I don't want to discredit it in that regard at all. I think, you know, this is brilliant. This is art. We talk about comic book art all the time. And sometimes, you know, our definition of art can be a little loosey-goosey there. This is art. This is something you can go back and look at again, you know, multiple different times and get multiple different things out of it. But with that said, it was not the complete package for me. And maybe it's because I'm not cool enough. Maybe it's because I don't have enough European comic experience. Maybe I just need to go back and sit with this one a little bit more. But as of right now, I'm not there yet, and I don't think this is either. As far as storytelling goes, you know, ideas, absolutely, it's wonderful. But at the end of the day, like, I want the total package in my 4s. I want the visuals and the story as a cohesive unit. And this delivers on one end, but lets me down on the other. And I was prepared to go much lower. And then I remembered, I dealt with the same thing with Jack Kirby. Where, like, as I was getting to read some of the Jack Kirby stuff, you know, some of it seems kind of juvenile and some of it seems silly and doesn't make sense all the time. But the fact that there was idea after idea after idea crammed in, and the originality and the creativity and everything that sprang forth from it, that eventually I learned to appreciate. So I think there's room for me to appreciate this. I'm going to go 3 out of 4 voyages for Lone Sloan.
There you go. Any case, we're going to take you on a voyage to other comic books in addition to Lone Sloan with our recommendations. Yes, this is the time of every single show where we give you other comic books that you can pick up at your local comic book shop in addition to the 6 Voyages of Lone Sloan in this wonderful hardback edition. It's really nice, too. It's not exactly treasury size, but it is oversized a little bit. It's bigger than a traditional trade or hardcover, so you get that art, and that's really the way to look at it, is in a collection or a book, because you can get lost in some of the pages. But any case, let's not get lost too much in it so that we can get to those recommendations, starting with Chad. I think you have something that's very similar to this, I guess.
Yes, I went and busted out my Jack Kirby, the Fourth World Omnibus, whereas Lone Sloan was a scant 62 pages. This one, I believe, is over 10 million bajillion pages worth of Jack Kirby. Honestly, this was put out from DC Comics circa 2007, and it has over 1,500 pages of Jack Kirby art and writing and ideas. It runs the gamut from Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen to the Forever People to the New Gods to Mr. Miracle, and has them listed as they were released. And this is an experience. And you get all of the mind-boggling madness of Jack Kirby, all that brilliant ideas, all the stuff that you're like, wait a minute, does that really work? It might not work, but it works, baby. It works in the end. And so this isn't your beach read. This isn't, you're not taking this on a plane. This is what you're going to do for the summer. Is sit down and read these books and see the progression of these ideas as they go. And, you know, Jack Kirby was not the type to sit down and have an intricately plotted storyline. You know, he was making a lot of stuff up, you know, issue by issue at a rate far beyond that of a mortal man. But you get Mr. Miracle, you get Big Barda, you get the New Gods, you get all of those wacky ideas. I just keep going back to the ideas. It's such a wellspring. And we talked about the things that sprang forth from Lone Sloan. DC has been building off of this Fourth World Omnibus for 50 years since. And they keep going back to this well because of how wonderful it is. So, yeah, if you want to source some more American ideas, which may or may not have been influenced by Lone Sloan and some of those European comics, I encourage you to go out and check out those Jack Kirby masterworks, especially the Fourth World Omnibus. And just prepare to have your mind blown.
All right. J.A., you're up next.
All right. So my recommendation is something we've actually read and reviewed on the show previously and sort of relates to what Chad has recommended, but also relates to the book we did this week. And that is the Stan Lee and Mobius Silver Surfer Parable, which was a 2-issue miniseries and then collected into a hardback. And trades and various things. You can get it lots of different ways now. But this is a perfect example of somebody who's like that French new wave artist, if you will, very much in the same mold as the Lone Sloan, but Stan Lee on the writing and the script duty. So you get a more approachable story. It's actually easier to follow along. And I'm not going to go too much into depth because I encourage everyone to go listen to that show. Our shows are evergreen, and we had a really nice discussion about that book. But one thing that is interesting to me, it was the first time that Mobius had ever done the Marvel method. So he meets Stan for lunch, where Stan pitches him the idea, and then 2 days later, he gets a complete story synopsis. He's like, I wasn't ready for that. I was, you know, expecting a big script, and here 2 days later, after just talking, having a lunch, and spouting off some ideas, Stan Lee sends me a whole script. There you go. Go wild. Go buck wild with that. And then that whole idea of the Kirby versus the Mobius Silver Surfer, which one is better, comes up in the movie Crimson Tide. Where Denzel Washington is, you know, emphasizing which is the better Silver Surfer. Was it Kirby's Silver Surfer or Mobius's Silver Surfer? And everyone erroneously apparently thought that this was part of the Quentin Tarantino script doctoring, but it's not. This was actually written in by the director, Tony Scott, because his brother Ridley is a big Mobius fan, go figure. And when Mobius found out about this, he said, it's better than a big stature because in a way, I cannot dream of anything better to be immortal than being in a movie about submarines.
That is awesome. Thank you for that story. I didn't even know that.
No, and it's something that we didn't discuss when we talked about Parable. So I thought that that was quite interesting. I love that he thinks that being in a movie about submarines makes one immortal.
Yeah, but that movie's got Gene Hackman in it, and he played Lex Luthor. So that movie's immortal. It's got Gene Hackman in it. Any case. Speaking of recommendations, I'm going to wrap things up with mine, and it's kind of not only a recommendation of a book, but a recommendation of an awesome show. You should check out another podcast with our good friend George. He does a great show called Short Box Summary, and I recently had an opportunity to be a guest on his particular program, and we read my recommendation for this week, which is Son of M, which I had never previously read before. It was done by writer David Hine with penciler Roy Allen Martinez. And it tells the story of what happens to Quicksilver after his sister famously said, no more mutants. That's right. At the end of House of M, that wonderful 2000s event where, well, no, it wasn't wonderful. Nothing that came out of that event or Avengers Disassembled was good. It trashed Wanda for years. It was just bad. But Wanda, after trying to give everybody their heart's desire, decides she's just going to say no more mutants and decimates them. And actually, I think the term decimate is accurate. But long story short, Quicksilver is one of the ones that loses his powers. And although the first issue is really rough because it really more deals with the fallout of Spider-Man out of House of M and Quicksilver being just a sad sack walking around, the rest of the story ain't that bad. Quicksilver gets rescued by his ex-wife, or maybe his wife at the time. Maybe they're still married. Crystal, he gets taken up to Atalan on the moon where all the Inhumans live. And he reconnects with Luna. He decides he's going to steal the Terrigen Mists so that he can give himself his mutant powers back. Kind of sort of does in the fact that he gets super speed, but kind of in a different way where he can just move forwards and backwards in time. So he kind of does that gets his daughter addicted to Terrigen Mist, because they refuse to give her to her because she's half human. And then he goes to Genosha and gives Terrigen Mist to all these other folks who end up having... Look, it was a public service announcement for why you shouldn't take drugs, yo. All those things that J.A. said earlier were like, maybe you should do that for Lone Snow. No, you shouldn't. Bad things will happen to you if you do that.
Say no to drugs, kids. Just say no.
But it was neat. Magneto doesn't have powers at this time, and he's real pissed off at Quicksilver for doing this, and he's like, oh man, my kids are just terrible. So it's like, I don't know. It deals with time travel in a really interesting way. Let's just say that. There's at one point, Quicksilver decides the best way to like defeat people is to just basically bring like three or four versions of himself into the exact same moment. So three or four versions of Quicksilver can beat up the same dude. Kind of like Multiple Man. Kind of a neat way of looking at powers, especially if you had time travel powers like that to kind of clone yourself. But yeah, I really think you should read it. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Because again, Quicksilver's a real dick. He's never been a really good character. And I was like, oh, the Inhumans, I don't care about them either. But it was a pretty decent story for having a bunch of characters that I gave no shits about. But one thing that we hope that you give a shit about is more episodes of The Last Comic Shop. We're going to be bringing to you all next month movies tied to comic books. That's right. It is Movie Mayhem. It's kicking off next week with our review of the first 14-some issues of Spawn, plus the Spawn movie with John Leguizamo and other people. Who else is in that movie, Chad?
Michael Jai White.
Okay.
Did we say John Leguizamo?
Martin Sheen, the president, is in it.
Oh, Martin Sheen. There you go. But we'll have that movie and comic book series. We'll have GoGo 13 and a movie version of GoGo 13. We'll have Batman 89 in honor of the 35th anniversary of that particular franchise. And, of course, we'll be wrapping it up with The Crow, which is kind of a hot-button book now because that new movie is going to be dropping, and again, like I think in June. They're going to come out with the new Crow movie. So watch the original with Brandon Lee with us. And read the book. Rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss any of these episodes of Movie Mayhem.
And while we might be the last comic shop podcast, we don't want to be the last comic shop. So we encourage everybody to get out there and find a shop near you where you could seek out some more obscure things this week. You could seek out things like The Six Voyages of Lone Sloan. You could seek out Silver Surfer Parable. Maybe we'll check to see if they have that Fourth World Omnibus by Jack Kirby. Or Andy's pick, Son of M, which might be a deeper pull on there. But all that and more. We talked about the innovation, the wellspring of ideas that come from these things. There's so many ideas just waiting for you at your local comic shop. Check those out. And then circle back to our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where you can find links to our socials and links to our merch store. Where what's on special this week, J.A.?
Well, we always have T-shirts, tote bags, coffee mugs. This week, nothing super merchy, but one thing I do want to suggest, because we didn't bring it up in the show, is that when you're reading this Six Voyages of Lone Sloan, go on to the Spotify and find Grail, produced by Rod Stt. Because that is some wacky ass music that goes perfectly with this this book. And the cover art on the album was by Philippe Drouet and features that pirate ship from the second voyage.
Yeah. So if you love those skull ships, man, that was such a cool visual. I don't understand. Why could you not give that visual a 4? Like, that was the coolest boat ever. You're on a boat. You want to be on that boat. Damn it. In case, we hope that you don't jump ship on the Last Comic Shop and you come back next week. Until then, I was the host of the most, Danny Larson. I was joined by Jay Scott and Chad Smith, and we hope that you stay safe. Stay voyaging. That's right. Go take a voyage this summer. It's coming up. Go someplace. Do something.
Don't do drugs, kids. Don't do drugs.
Yeah.
J.A. is not saying that you should take bath salts and then read Lone Sloan. No, he's not saying it, kids. That is not.
No, I totally did not. Stay away from the PCP. Stay away from the.
Say no to drugs, kids. Say no to drugs.
The Last Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.